Hurricane Milton just ripped through Florida, following closely on the heels of Hurricane Helene. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, around 1 million refugees are fleeing the fighting there. And in Ukraine, Russia is using drones to hunt down individual citizens in what has been called a human safari. We'll look at all this and more on today's Trumpet World. All around the world, this has been an autumn of weather curses. Major storms have hit Europe, Southeast Asia, and now two hurricanes have hit the United States. To get the latest on these American hurricanes, we'll hear now from Andrew Miller.
The United States of America is being hit by natural disaster after natural disaster. Hurricane Milton made landfall as a Category 3 storm in Florida yesterday and has already killed five people and left millions without power. The footage of the storm is just terrifying. High winds tearing off roofs, and most importantly, pushing Atlantic Ocean water like a river into the state of Florida. You can see footage of even like docks and other such structures where normally the waves roll towards them, with the water just going horizontally through them like it was a huge river flowing into the interior of the United States. Normally a storm like this would be considered a tragedy, but a fairly normal tragedy. But this one comes right just days after Hurricane Helene, which was the third most destructive storm to hit the United States in the 21st century. Hurricane Helene also made landfall in Florida and went up through the interior of the United States, killing over 200 people and causing millions of more dollars of damage. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has come out and said that they do have enough money to deal with both the aftermath of Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton, but don't have enough money to get throughout the rest of the year, which is bad news because the hurricane season isn't over yet, and there will most likely be more hurricanes that need emergency funds. Many Americans are angry given the fact that the Biden administration has already spent $650 million this year on illegal immigrants. The FEMA distributes those funds, although it doesn't actually come from their budget. So it's not specifically accurate to say that FEMA ran out of money because of that spending. But looking more broadly overall at the U.S. government, we do still live in a nation that has earmarked $650 million to helping third world immigrants cross the border illegally, and has not earmarked nearly enough for American citizens, many of them taxpaying American citizens, to help them with this natural disaster. This is definitely turning a lot of public sentiment against the Biden-Harris administration. Some people are even calling it Kamala's Katrina, liking it back to the criticisms George W. Bush faced with how he handled Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and convincing many of the people to look more to the Republican Party as the party that is going to actually help American people instead of refusing to deal with these crises while helping illegals cross the border. There's a particularly relevant prophecy in Deuteronomy 28 that talks about one of the curses God will bring on end-time Israel if they turn away from them, is the stranger will get up above them very high, while you will come down very low. That's definitely how the Biden-Harris administration is operating, where they're prioritizing the strangers that are in America illegally over and above the actual citizens who are suffering from these types of crises. The other big prophetic angle from this story is just the sheer amount of focus people are putting on global warming as the cause behind Hurricane Milton and Hurricane Helene, saying that it's actually rising carbon dioxide levels that are causing these storms to get more severe. which really draws people's attention away from God's ability to use storms like these to correct America. Another particularly salient verse in this case is Nahum 1 and verse 3, which says, "The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and he will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord has his way in the whirlwind and the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet." And so there's many verses like this through the Bible that do prove that God does control the weather. He has much more control over the weather than a carbon dioxide molecule does. And he uses things like this to get America's attention for their sins. Now, of course, that's not to say that the people of Florida are any more sinful than the people elsewhere in the nation. Florida does just happen to live in the part of the country where hurricanes happen, like Oklahoma lives in a part of the country where tornadoes happen, and California in a part where wildfires happen, and other places where earthquakes happen. But God uses all these various natural disasters to really try to like wake people up to the sins of their nation, and even in this particular case, in the corruption in their government. I think, yeah, this hurricane's really exposed, like few things have, just how much that Deuteronomy prophecy is coming to pass, where the a crisis like this happens, and the government doesn't have the money for its own people, because it's spent it all on strangers coming into the gates. And so between the natural disasters on the one hand, and the illegal immigration on the other hand, there's just really a barrage of curses in the United States, and God's intent is to get people to ask themselves, well, what's going wrong, and what can we do different? How can we rely more on God? How can we rely, put more, less faith in the FEMA agencies like that, which aren't really helping the American people, because something's going wrong in America where people don't put the faith in God they once did and are looking more to the government for solutions, and yet the government has become increasingly corrupt as time goes on. And so one piece of literature we'll put in the show notes is Why Natural Disasters, that actually goes through scripture by scripture in even much more detail than I did here, as to why God allows things like this to happen and what he's hoping the American people will learn from disasters like Milton and Helene. In other American news, one of the great sins in America that God wants to get people's attention about is anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is actually at an all-time high in the United States. Based on an Anti-Defamation League report from October 6, there have been over 10,000 anti-Semitic incidences in the United States since the October 7th Hamas attack last year, which is a 200% increase over the year previously. God's also wanting to show people the curse that is coming from illegal immigration. And towards that end, the James O'Keefe Media Group released undercover media footage this week showing the Mexican army actually assisting illegal immigrants across the border. So these millions of immigrants that Biden's given so many millions of dollars to are actually part of a foreign invasion that the Mexican military is participating in. And then one third story we'll leave you with this week, leading up into the election season, is also that the Georgia State Election Board has subpoenaed all Fulton County election records in the lead up to the 2024 election. Unfortunately, there's probably not much they're going to be able to do about election fraud in Georgia before the 2024 election, but the subpoena shows that there was definitely fraud in the 2020 election and will likely be more fraud again in the 2024 election, again highlighting this some of the government corruption and other curses that Americans need to be alerted to.
Thank you very much to Andrew for that report. We'll now get to Mihailo for an update on the Middle East. But before we get into that, Wednesday's show was a bit of a special edition. We had a couple of interviews with some Middle East experts. I'd been looking forward to talking to them for some time, but on the day I was pretty sick and Mihailo stepped into the breach for me. He did a great job. Can you take a few minutes just to tell us about your discussions?
Yes, so we're over a year now from the start of the October 7th war in Israel. I think this war has taken a lot of twists and turns a lot of us weren't expecting, both in the region, in the Middle East, and the wider world as a whole. It's certainly a great, shall we say, look into how warfare has changed in modern times with different arenas, including some far away from the conflict zone itself, getting involved. And we had two special guests on the Wednesday program to get a lens into some of those ways that the Israel-Hamas war is taking. Our first guest was Tal Orr-Cohen Montemayor, who is the founder and CEO of Cyberwell, a Tel Aviv-based company that serves as a contractor for Facebook, X, TikTok, some of these other big social media companies. That they basically use Cyberwell to monitor anti-Semitic content, where this content is coming from. It also serves as a lobby group to maybe fix some loopholes in laws to tackle incitement to violence against Jews, etc. And we discussed a lot about how the Israel-Hamas war has really turned into a global information war as well as a ground war. It's certainly one of, if not the biggest examples of a war being fought in cyberspace, with people who aren't combatants directly related to the conflict being able to cause a stir by reaching out to the global community, by putting out messages or putting out narratives and causing different, shall I say, fallout aspects of the war to happen in other places. Our second guest was Avi Melamed, who is a former Israeli intelligence official. He now works as an analyst as well as an author. And we discussed with him about, per his sources and his experience in watching the Middle East, what we're seeing now with the expanding front in as Israel goes into places like Lebanon, as countries like Syria get involved, as outside actors like Europe and Turkey are starting to get into the fray more and more. What does this mean now that the war has expanded in a much dramatic way outside of Gaza?
Yeah, they both had, I think, quite a lot of interesting things to say. I think the first interview, I thought it was really interesting how quickly this kind of October 7th denial campaign got started. I think that was begun October 8th. I was reading Avi Melamed's book in the run-up to the interview. I was really impressed. I thought he did a great job of writing this book that is both deep but simple and that breaks things down in a way that, if you don't know anything, is easy to understand, but that if you do know a fair bit about the Middle East, still has a lot of deep insight. So I thought those were a couple of great guests, and hopefully we'll have more guests like that on the show before too long. Now, especially with Avi, you were talking quite a bit about the Lebanon war, and really we've seen a lot more news on that. I think that's the big focus of the Middle East. So what's the latest developments in how this war between Israel and Hezbollah is going in Lebanon?
Well, as of the recording of this episode, Israel has now four divisions going into southern Lebanon with an estimated 15,000 troops. Doing clearing operations, getting rid of Hezbollah infrastructure, of course, actually fighting the enemy itself. If memory serves me right, people estimate roughly about a fourth or a quarter of Lebanese territory is now part of either the conflict zone or Israel's declared evacuation zones. So this is obviously causing a lot of turmoil in Lebanese society as a whole. You mentioned the million refugees. That's the estimation that the United Nations gave on what some of the fallout of Israel's invasion is. They're estimating that over 600,000 are displaced within Lebanon internally, and at least 300,000 have migrated abroad.
I was just running some quick numbers. So it's a similar number of troops to the 2006 Israel-Lebanon war, where Hezbollah kidnapped a couple of Israeli soldiers and Israel came in to get them out. So I guess this doesn't seem like this is a war for the extermination of Hezbollah, at least at the moment, but more of a defanging operation to try and persuade them to stop lobbying missiles over. Is that what it looks like so far?
So far, for one thing, that's what the IDF themselves has said, which of course they would say even if they were planning something bigger. But with where they are now and how fast they're moving, they could move up Lebanon very fast if they wanted to, and they haven't been doing that. The main reason for the war is to make northern Israel safe for those 60,000 Israeli internal refugees to come back to their homes without worrying about missiles being dumped on them. So the main target of the operation is those weapons installations and arms depots, etc., in southern Lebanon that directly pose a threat to the north of Israel. Obviously, they could target anywhere in Israel, but with the proximity timing, the northern communities are especially vulnerable. But with that being said, with some of the operations we've seen, and we've talked about a couple of weeks ago on this program too, like the decapitation of all the leadership, the pagers
attacks. Right, that's pretty different compared to 2006. There wasn't the entire leadership taken out before going in back then.
Very, very much so. And just because Israel's immediate goal with this ground operation is to demilitarize the south, and they very may well pull back in after they consider that a success, Israel itself, and when I say Israel, I mean the top leadership of Israel, has confirmed that they have much bigger goals than this.
Hezbollah will continue to try to fight Israel from densely populated areas at your expense. It doesn't care if Lebanon is dragged into a wider war. Christian, Druze, Muslim, Sunnis, and Shiites, all of you are suffering because of Hezbollah's futile war against Israel. Today I ask every mother and every father in Lebanon a simple question. Is it worth it? Because it doesn't have to be that way. I know you want a better future for your children. So I'm speaking to all of you today. There is a better way for your children, for your cities, for your villages, for your country. You deserve to restore Lebanon to its days of tranquility. You deserve a Lebanon that is different. One country, one flag, one people. Don't let these terrorists destroy your future any more than they've already done. Stand up and take your country back. You have an opportunity that hasn't existed in decades. An opportunity to take care of the future of your children and grandchildren. You have an opportunity to save Lebanon before it falls into the abyss of a long war that will lead to destruction and suffering like we see in Gaza. It doesn't have to be that way. Each of you can take a step for your future, even a small step. You can make a difference. I say to you, the people of Lebanon, free your country from Hezbollah so that this war can end. Free your country from Hezbollah so that your country could prosper again, so that future generations of Lebanese and Israeli children will know neither war nor bloodshed, but will finally live together in peace.
That was a video put up by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on October 8th, and you could tell from that he's talking to the Lebanese people and basically telling them that if they want a revolution, now A, now's the time to do it, and B, Israel will support you in this. And if you go back even to Lebanon's civil war, when Israel was much more long-term involved in Lebanon, they did so with the help of allied militias, especially the Christian Catholic militias, which are still around in Lebanon. They're not nearly as powerful as they were decades back, but they still have old scores to settle with Hezbollah. And I mean, you look at the facts on the ground. You look at Hassan Nasrallah. He said in his video, Hassan Nasrallah is dead. His successor is dead, and the successor's successor is also dead. The military has lost all of its communications techniques. If they wanted to do something, you don't need Benjamin Netanyahu to go and say it outright to know that this is the time.
And that's another difference between now and 2006, is I think that the internal Lebanese view of Hezbollah has changed dramatically since then. And I think you go back to 2006 and most of Lebanon probably sided with Hezbollah against Israel in that invasion. Now, I mean, you might have a better sense than I do of what the feeling is on the ground, but Hezbollah has lost a ton of popularity since then, with the Beirut blast where they stored fertilizer and blew up half of it. Like, there's a lot of things that Hezbollah, they've been assassinating prime ministers. They are not, they've been involved in the Syria civil war. You know, for all of these reasons, they are not popular. So even though at the moment, this is perhaps the same troop level or similar troop levels, maybe a little higher, it kind of rose towards the end as the 2006 civil war. This is almost certainly going to be a much, much bigger setback for Hezbollah, if not a total defeat, or total eradication.
Well, back then in 2006, they were still seen as a resistance organization pushing out a foreign occupier. Israel hasn't been there in 20 years, and since then, like you mentioned, there's been a lot of problems. The economy has been run to the ground. They've turned Lebanon into a vassal state of Iran, which maybe some Lebanese wanted a resistance group against outside incursions. That doesn't mean bringing another outside group in to take advantage of the country. Even in our interview with Avi on the Wednesday program, he mentioned that there's even a lot of Shiites now. The Shiite population is turning against Hezbollah, which Hezbollah is a Shiite organization. That's basically where they get almost all of their support from inside the country itself. And with everybody seeing how Hezbollah has basically been letting Israel push it around, how Israel has been going bolder and bolder and bolder to the point where even killing their own leader, about as much of an open declaration of war as you could get, and Hezbollah still hasn't responded with all the fire and fury they've been threatening for all these years. Not only is Hezbollah extremely unpopular, they look weak, and there's not really much they could do about it, short of launching however many tens of thousands of rockets and missiles, etc., that they have over to Israel. But if they did that, A, their insurance policy against Israel would be completely gone. B, that would definitely mean Israel is moving up to uproot them, and they wouldn't really have much of a recourse after that. So at this point, there is a bit of a sword of Damocles hanging over Hezbollah, where no matter what they do, they're always a few inches away from the knife's blade, and there's nothing really they could do about it.
We've talked about the forecast, what the Bible says about what's happening in Lebanon quite a lot on this show, because it is such a specific forecast and it is happening in front of your eyes so dramatically that we've been saying for years that Hezbollah is going to be defeated or dramatically weakened or broken from Iran, that somehow Lebanon is going to be removed from the Iranian orbit, where it has for many years been very firmly ensconced, and into the European orbit. And that is what we're watching happening before our eyes. So can you give us an overview of what we're expecting because of that prophecy?
Yes, well, there's actually two prophecies in particular that factor into this. The first one would be in Daniel 11, verse 40, which discusses two end-time power blocks, a king of the north and a king of the south, that clash. And if you read the rest of the prophecy, it leads into, chapter 12, verse 1, says a time of trouble for the whole world. If you can look at biblical and secular history and see that the king of the north is referring to an ascendant European power. We have a booklet of History and Prophecy of the Middle East that goes into that a little bit more detail if people would like to learn more. And since the 1990s, our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury, has pointed to the King of the South as being a radical Islamist bloc led by the Islamic Republic of Iran, Hezbollah's paymaster, the number one terrorist-sponsoring nation in the Middle East. If you read the rest of the prophecy, it talks about some other countries that the King of the North invades, implying that they're with the King of the South. It mentions countries like Egypt, Libya, some of these other Arab states. Lebanon's not on the list, but even though it's Iran's biggest proxy now, at least in funding and military capability, where are they? The other prophecy that this ties into is Psalm 83, which speaks of an alliance of countries coming together to that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. Mr. Fleury has said that there's no record of this alliance happening in the Bible in secular history, which is why we know it's for now. Specifically in verse 8 is mentioned Asher, or the Assyrians, the ancestral people of the Germans, which are obviously part of Europe. They're the most powerful country in that European combine. And it mentions a few other Middle Eastern peoples, such as the Ishmaelites or the Peninsular Arabs. Even their own Muslim tradition points to that. Moab and Ammon, the people that lived in the land that is now Jordan today. And crucially, it also mentions Tyre, very famous city of antiquity in southern Lebanon, where the fighting is happening right now, and Gebal or Byblos, another formerly leading Lebanese city-state that's in the north on the opposite side of the country. And based off of that forecast, Mr. Fleury has said that you're going to see Lebanon at some point switch allegiance from Iran to Germany. We don't know the exact details of how that's going to happen, but based off of some material Mr. Fleury has written and what's going on the ground even before this whole war started, the most likely way for that to happen would be if Hezbollah, which is for all intents and purposes Tehran's lapdog, even among all the other proxies Iran has, getting uprooted from Lebanon and Europe coming in and taking over as a power vacuum. This is what we wrote in our latest print edition that just went up on the website yesterday about this, quote, Germany will be the power behind Lebanon and Syria by this point. The implication is Israel no longer sees Lebanon and Syria as threats. Could this be because Israel will have a hand in installing the country's new governments, or because they believe a European ally has the situation there under control? Putting these prophecies together, we expect Lebanon to leave Iran's orbit. The most likely route is for Hezbollah, Tehran's lapdog, to be forced out of power. Hezbollah has never been more vulnerable than right now, end quote. And there are a lot of ways this could play out. And in the short term, we don't know exactly what Israel is going to do, what Hezbollah is going to do, what Germany or Iran are going to do. But even if you look at just the state of Hezbollah now, with the pagers attack, with the decapitation, with all of these other things happening, at this point, Israel has set the stage for Hezbollah to be uprooted, and arguably there would not have been anybody else so bold enough to fire the opening shots, per se, and start doing this process. However it plays out, there's not really much left for Hezbollah's enemies to clean up the mess. Obviously, there's still plenty of divisions of soldiers and weapons or whatnot, but in terms of the leadership, in terms of the communication, in terms of the morale of the organization as a whole, that's already been shattered. The first most important blow has already been struck. And however this plays out, we can expect what's going on the ground now to be extremely important as a situation in Lebanon, as a situation in the Middle East as a whole unfolds and we see these prophecies come to fruition.
And that article is Hezbollah's Days Are Numbered. We'll link to that in the show notes. And it is just, you know, like you said, it's right from Daniel 11 that talks about this is going to happen at the time of the end. The Bible has a lot of very specific forecasts about things that will happen at the end times. And you are seeing those things happening on your TV. This shift in alliance for Lebanon. We're seeing a lot of dramatic, eye-catching footage, whether it's from Lebanon, whether it's from these weather curses that we're seeing all around the world. But the most important part of these events that we need to make sure we don't lose sight of is that they're all prophesied in your Bible, that all of these events point us to the God that inspired the Bible. They show us that he rules in the kingdom of men, that he is in command, that all of these things, that all of these events on earth are happening according to his plan, and that he is bringing all of this about in accordance with his will and his love for all of mankind. And so it's worth digging into these prophecies. It's worth understanding what the Bible says about these because it points you to God the Father. And that article, Hezbollah's Days Are Numbered, is a great way to get up to date with what is happening in Lebanon. And then that whole Trumpet Print magazine is, of course, a great way to get to grips with all of these different world events. We'd be so happy to send that out to you. It comes out about 10 times a year, roughly once a month, goes into detail into the biggest trends all around the world and gives you something that you can study and dig into to prove these prophecies for yourself so that you're not taking our word for it. Just, you know, don't believe it just because we say it, but you can get that and you can study that with your Bible and bring your Bible to life. So that's the Trumpet magazine. You can request your own free print copy. We send those out anywhere in the world and you can order that at our website, thetrumpet.com. But of course, there's a lot of other important dramatic pieces of news, not just in Lebanon, going on in the Middle East. Can you give us a rundown of those, please, Mihailo?
Yes. On Sunday, Israeli media reported that Hamas had privately admitted that 80% of the Gazans killed by Israel, that the Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza has been reporting, are either members of Hamas or their families.
Right. It shows that Israel is far from killing civilians indiscriminately, as so many of its critics allege, is actually being very good at specifically targeting Hamas members.
Mm-hmm. And that's even assuming those numbers are accurate, which there's plenty of evidence to suggest they are very much not. If people would like to learn more about that, in our January edition, we had an article, The Truth and Lies About the Israel-Hamas War, which is, again, from January, so a lot has happened since then, but there are still some general principles, including some foundational ones as the war started, that help put some of these numbers in perspective. On Monday, the Wall Street Journal also released an exclusive suggesting that the Houthi terror group in Yemen is getting its weapons from a very interesting partner, and that would be notorious Russian arms dealer Victor Boot. If that rings a bell for some people, that's because he was the subject of a very high-profile prisoner swap in December of 2022 in exchange for Brittany Griner, a women's basketball player that was arrested at a Russian airport for possession of marijuana. And there was a lot of flack for, like, how could you release this really dangerous man for somebody that's such a lopsided deal? A lot of people were wondering what the implications of this would be.
Think of this. America's supposed to be supporting Ukraine and its cause in this war. And now we send them back this merchant of death, Putin, that is. For all the years that we've heard that Russia, Putin's the worst in the world. And then, of course, Donald Trump was aligned right with him. And then here comes Joe Biden. Here comes Joe Obama and says, here you go. Have the merchant of death back and send him back to you. Send him into Ukraine. Maybe he can get since he's been in the slammer for 10 years, send him to Ukraine. He can get his feet wet there fighting against the forces we're supporting. How does any of this even make sense?
That was Mr. Stephen Fleury on our sister program, The Trumpet Daily, speaking about the swap when it happened. And you can see, again, maybe it's taken 2 years for this analysis to get confirmed, but it has been confirmed in Mr. Fleury's case. As you heard, he was talking about, well, we're fighting Russia and Ukraine by proxy, and now we're helping Russia get somebody to help. Now, at this point, it's not even Ukrainians getting American money that are the target of men like this that the U.S. gave on a silver platter back to Moscow. In this case, it's the Houthis that are targeting Americans themselves, both military ships and civilian ships in the Red Sea, as well as attacking Israel, as contributing to this war that we were just talking about earlier. And another story related to that about America's weakness in some of these prisoner exchanges or deals with people is that on Tuesday, Nasir Ahmad Tawedi, who was a refugee from Afghanistan, who was given legal status to stay in the U.S. for helping America out in its war against the Taliban there in Afghanistan. He was arrested on charges of planning a terror attack on Election Day. He apparently had some connections to ISIS, and his brother was involved in this as well. He lives in Oklahoma City, in America's heartland, the site of the deadliest domestic terror attack in American history, not counting 9/11, some of these other foreign sponsored attacks. He was planning something on Election Day there. It's near where our head office is based in. And goes to show you that a lot of these decisions, even if they're years away from the initial moves, as is the case of Afghanistan in 2021, they're still having a major impact on America, on American security, on the security of the world, too, in the case of the Houthis. And Mr. Fleury had an article and in our special edition on Afghanistan in 2021, this isn't incompetence, this is treason, that goes through why this is the case and why a lot of these events have an ulterior connecting motive, shall we say, rather than just happenstance.
I saw an article, I think it was The Federalist this week. It talked about how at the time, some people on the right were saying America's letting in people from Afghanistan that aren't being vetted. And they said that CNN, I think, put out a fact check saying not true, where this clearly this is the ultimate fact check. This is the ultimate proof that people were being allowed in unvetted, that you have this guy that they brought in from Afghanistan during that chaotic withdrawal. And he was going on to bring about this terrorist attack.
A lot of the stories this week are pretty deadly, but this one struck me as being particularly horrific. A story of a new kind of sport, I guess you could call it, that is being invented in Ukraine. And here to tell us more about this, we've got Jeremiah Jacques.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Yes, Russia's attack on the Ukrainian city of Kherson is intensifying, and it is taking on some very surreal, almost science fiction kind of elements. So Kherson, it's in eastern Ukraine. This is a city that Russia captured in the early days of the full-scale war back in February and March of 2022. But then about 6 months later, the Ukrainians recaptured it. So it has been in Ukrainian hands ever since. And ever since the recapture, it has not really been on the front lines of the war. You know, it's not a place where you've got battalions of Ukrainian soldiers stationed fighting Russians. It's mostly full of civilians, men, women, and children who are just trying to live their lives. But Kherson is just across the Dnipro River from where Russian forces are stationed. And so the Russians have been, you know, for months now, they've been firing missiles at civilian targets in the city, also shelling it from time to time, sometimes very heavy barrages of shelling. And this is mainly just to terrify the citizens, to make them want to leave the city and to make them want to surrender the whole war. But in recent months, the Russians are increasingly focusing on drone attacks. So the Russians use FPV drones for this. That's first person view. That means the operators have a video feed showing them everything that the drone sees. And the operators are across the river, maybe miles away, but they can find civilians walking around Kherson or biking or driving a car, just people, you know, who are trying to go about their day. And the Russians can fly their drone right up to them and either drop a grenade from above or detonate a payload on the, you know, from the drone itself against this target. And they can kill or injure people very well this way. And as you said there, this is being called a human safari because the people in Kherson feel like they're being hunted by these drones. So it's extremely terrifying for the people. And the rates of the attacks are going up. Back in August, July and August, there were about 100 of these kinds of drone attacks happening in Kherson each day. But now that number is up to around 300 per day, sometimes even climbing above 500 in a single day. 500 either drone strikes or explosive drops. There's a journalist named Kaylin Robertson who spent the last few weeks in Kherson, and he's been publishing footage of these drone attacks, and it's wild to see it. And it's now happening so often that it is having a real psychological effect and impact on the people of Kherson. The residents are just terrified, thinking of when and where the next explosion might happen. The video footage shows that in some cases, the Russians will fly one drone up to someone's window, the window of their house or apartment, and then they'll detonate the drone right there by the window, so that way it breaks the window. And then they have another drone just behind that first one. And with the window broken, that second drone can fly right inside the house or apartment or building and wait until the drone operator sees a person on his little video feed there. And then he detonates the payload to kill or injure that person. So you might think that being inside your house would offer you protection from this, but it doesn't. These you know, operators have found a way around that as well. So this human safari, it does sound like something out of a horror movie, but this is real life, and it's happening every day to the people in Kherson, and it shows just what a nightmare this war has become for many people.
That really is a shocking form of safari. So is this like official government policy, or is this soldiers having a kind of a sick laugh, or do you know more about what's behind that?
It's a very good question, and Russia hasn't published anything about this from their end, so it's difficult to know if this is rogue operators running amok or if it is a new aspect of the military doctrine. But I would say that on the scale that this is happening, with now we're looking at 300 of these attacks per day, sometimes up above 500 per day, I don't think this could just be a few individuals who are doing this. At that scale, this really seems like it must be something that's, you know, happening with some official orders. And it's a massive quantity of drones. A lot of these are suicide missions. So it would require quite a lot of high level, you know, instruction.
This is a pretty sobering look at the real world, the world as it is. And sometimes we try to ignore the scale of human evil or man's inhumanity to mankind.
but that one nation or one that people could be hunting down other people puts that pretty vividly on display. Can you put that in into some prophetic context for us?
Yes, sure. Yes, a big part of this, the whole war really, a big part of it is because there's a real absence of will in the United States to stand up against aggressor nations in a decisive, meaningful way. And I would like to read a quick quote here from Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. This is from an article in our May-June 2022 edition of the Philadelphia Trumpet. So it's just a couple of months after Russia's full-scale war on Ukraine started. And Mr. Fleury writes, quote, "As Russia has flattened Ukraine, the United States has done little in response. For years, we have allowed Putin to get away with aggressive behavior. Our leaders, especially Barack Obama and Joe Biden, would not challenge him in a meaningful way. The fruits of our weakness are now on display in Ukraine. America's weak will led to this crisis," end quote. So that's Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury there. And he goes on from that quote to talk about how the U.S. Was not sending fighter jets to Ukraine to help them defend themselves, not sending other kinds of meaningful weaponry. And he makes clear that America's weak will and our failure to give adequate support to Ukraine and our failure to really stand firmly against the kind of psychotic, satanic aggression that Russia and other nations are dishing out is a huge part of the reason for all of this. And he said that that's all because of our broken will, which was prophesied to be a curse against us. You can see that in Leviticus chapter 26. That's a passage about America's broken will. So for anyone who would like to understand the U.S.'s failure to stand up meaningfully against Russian aggression in the context of Bible prophecy, and all of the devastation that this will lead to, I would recommend this article by Mr. Fleury. It's called Bible Prophecy Comes Alive in Ukraine.
Thank you for that, Jeremiah. And you had a few more remarkable stories out of Asia this week for us.
That's right. Yes. First, a quick one about Japan. Japan is building its first aircraft carrier since World War II, and it's doing so with the help of its old World War II enemy, the United States. This news broke on Tuesday, and the situation is that one of Japan's helicopter carriers, which was already formidable in its own right, is actually in San Diego, California right now, and it's undergoing conversion to become a light aircraft carrier. This is the JS Kaga. That's the name of the vessel, and it'll be carrying F-35Bs. And this is really only the latest part of America's efforts to help Japan boost Japan's military power. Japan has been ramping up its military spending by major amounts almost every year now, and America is helping it to become a full-fledged, fully normalized military powerhouse once again, and now even with an aircraft carrier. So there are analysts now saying that Japan has become America's most important ally, since Japan, of course, is a major military powerhouse and it's becoming more powerful all the time, and since Japan appears to be aligned with the United States. But the problem is Japan's alignment with America will not last. Bible prophecy shows that soon all of that firepower that America is helping Japan to acquire will be used in stunningly destructive ways, and it shows that Japan will turn against America. So it's easy to see right now why the U.S. wants to work with Japan. We think we have a powerful ally against China, even against Russia, but it's a short-sighted decision, and it's one that will help to bring about some truly dark days. And then another story here about North Korea. North Korean soldiers are now fighting in Ukraine, shoulder to shoulder with Russians against Ukrainians. That is according to a report by South Korea's defense minister that was published on Tuesday. It says Russia and the North now have a mutual treaty that is akin to a military alliance. And there's already been abundant proof of North Korea sending, you know, game-changing quantities of artillery shells and lots of ballistic missiles to Russia as well for the Russians to use against the Ukrainians. And we've also had proof earlier this year of North Korea sending some military engineering units to help the Russians. So this new report about North Korean soldiers It's still unconfirmed at this point, but it would really be just the next logical step for the North. And it would be in line with this growing and deepening treaty between Russia and North Korea, just showing that it is very near to a full-fledged military alliance.
Thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. Last week, I talked to you about the sun finally setting on the British Empire. Britain will hand over the Chagos Islands. And at that point, there will no longer be the sun shining always on some portion of British territory. This is a crucial naval base in the Indian Ocean that provides an unsinkable aircraft carrier off the coast, or quite a long way, but still reachable to the coast of the Middle East. Something that can be used to keep clear the shipping lanes really throughout the Indian Ocean, Middle East, even over into East Africa. It's a crucial location. The US shares the Diego Garcia military base there. And you know, as we see with the Houthi attacks and even with COVID and ships getting stuck in the Suez Canal and things like that, control of the sea lanes leads directly to things being cheap to ship around, prices being low, low inflation and prosperity. Like, these are crucial nuts and bolts of national power. So it makes a lot of difference whether Britain, America, other countries are able to have control of these sea lanes. And I think what we're seeing is a global war to push Britain and America away from the Chagos Islands, away from this crucial base. There are a lot of countries, India, China, that would love to see America and Britain away from that. But what we learned this week is that the Biden administration is on that same side as China and India, against basically Britain and the United States. So we learned this week on Monday, the Telegraph had an exclusive saying that actually it was the Biden administration that pushed really hard for Britain to surrender these islands. And they lent hard on the new Labour government to make this happen. They basically threatened that the special relationship would be over if Britain did not give up these islands. And it's a kind of crazy and very revealing story that you have the United States pressuring Britain to do something that harms the United States. Like, this puts that Diego Garcia military base at risk now. Britain is now is leasing this on a 99-year lease, but a lease is a lot less secure than title deeds and ownership. Now, this is territory that Britain controlled fair and square. I think that the international legal case for taking this away from Britain is thoroughly absurd. This is territory, like we talked about last time, that Britain was given by France when Napoleon surrendered in 1814. So, you know, did the world a massive favor? We then used these naval bases and things like that to stamp out global slavery and the slave trade all around the world. Again, massive, massive force for good, massive favor for the world there. Administratively, it was combined with Mauritius, but there's no historical link to Mauritius whatsoever. It was just a convenient administrative district. When Mauritius was given its independence shortly before then, it was carved off from Mauritius. So Mauritius gained its independence, but not these islands. And then somehow this international tribunal comes along and says, no, actually, Mauritius is the rightful owners of these. It's a load of rubbish. And it's a completely absurd ruling. And it's, I'm sure, because judges are being lent on by China and India and some of these other places that would love to have, you know, China would love to have this under Mauritius control, because then they can push Britain and America out and they can push themselves in. So the court had made this ruling. The Biden administration basically said they were pushing this because if Britain didn't give up the Chagos Islands, then Diego Garcia base would be at risk, which is also absolutely absurd. The court that made this absurd ruling has no authority. It's a non-binding court. It doesn't have any legal validity. It can't force anyone to follow through with this. It has no power. Britain is completely justified in ignoring it. So there's no one around who can compel Britain to give up these islands. It's like, okay, whose army is going to take the Diego Garcia military base away from Britain and the United States? Nobody has the power to make that happen without just outright defeating these powers. I mean, it's not something that they can do lightly. So this was an absurd decision from the Biden administration coming along, or a strange excuse saying, well, if you don't give up these islands, the Diego Garcia military base would be at risk. And so this administration comes along, and now they force Britain to surrender a key piece of territory, even to America's harm. And that is quite a dramatic story, but it's an important story. We talk a fair bit about this book, America Under Attack, that exposes what is going on within the United States, that exposes why you have an administration within the United States that is basically opposed to traditional American values and America's traditional way of life and is trying to radically transform America. What is going on there? Why? Like, how do you make sense of that? There's a spiritual dimension to that. There's a spiritual war behind that. And America Under Attack reveals that, shows you how it's prophesied in the Bible and helps you understand it. So we point to that a lot, but this is Trumpet World. This isn't a show that's designed primarily for an American audience. But I think it's stories like this that show this is why the whole world needs to be concerned by these kind of stories. You're pushing this key seagate away from powers that have upheld freedom of navigation of the oceans and towards powers that have not, will impact everyone. It will make trade less free for everyone, will make trading goods around the world more expensive for everyone. Because America is such a powerful country, what happens in America will impact the world. There's a chapter in that book that deals specifically with Barack Obama's foreign policy disasters. That chapter is titled, This is Not Incompetence. Similar to that, what you heard from Mihailo earlier from that special issue on Afghanistan, this is not incompetence, this is treason. This is deliberate. This is a regime that is bringing down America on purpose, and it's bringing down America on the national scene, inside America, and internationally. And it's going to affect a whole lot of other countries. And a big part of that bringing down America is harming the relationship with Britain and harming the relationship with Israel in the Middle East. You know, this is one of the things that we've seen alongside all of the Middle Eastern stories that we've talked about earlier, that Israel has stopped informing the United States of what they're doing. There are American officials complaining to newspapers saying, well, Benjamin Netanyahu hasn't told us what he's planning on doing to punish Iran. Why is that? Well, it's because Israel knows they can't trust America anymore. That if they tell the United States what they're planning on doing, they may well warn the mullahs in Iran. And so the truth that is included in America Under Attack, it is going to impact you wherever you are. And that's one part of the reason why we still mention that book on this show. Even if you're not American, it is crucial to understanding your world. And again, like we talked about after the Middle East, though, more importantly than that, it points you to the Bible. It points you to God the Father. It shows you how all of the most important events that are happening in the world are all happening in accordance with God's plan for mankind. And so it helps answer questions like, okay, well, you know, what is the spiritual war? Why would a loving God allow someone to come in there at the top of America to cause all of this damage? Why would he allow all of this other suffering around the world? And so that book helps answer those questions. It's an essential book to understanding all of world news. Well, I just want to give a rundown of another few important stories from Europe. Austria is still struggling to agree a government. I could probably give you that headline every week for the next several weeks. They are still really stuck in this position of this far-right party founded by a couple of former SS officers won the election, came in first place, but nobody wants to work with them, but nobody can get a government going without them. So that's an important story to keep watching as you see politics across Europe just become gummed up. And this is going to pave the way for really a new form of government for Europe as you see nations pivot away from their democratic systems that they're just struggling to make work right now. Similar story maybe in France, as France struggles to deal with its tax cuts, where the Prime Minister, Michel Barnier, has put out even more detail about his economic policies. And You know, he's trying to rule from the center. He's promising massive tax rises and massive spending cuts. And the left opposes the spending cuts and the right opposes the tax rises and the spending cuts, really, with the pension and complete deadlock, complete gridlock in France. You're potentially seeing another democratic system completely stop working. Germany had some bad economic news this week. The economic minister on Wednesday announced that the economy was expected to shrink by 0.2% this year. It had been forecast to grow by 0.3%. It's now the second year in a row of shrinking. If that forecast is fulfilled, that will make Germany the only G7 economy projected to shrink and to decline in 2024. That's going to make a lot of Germans worried, and Germany's political system has largely become dysfunctional. So as you see all of these economic systems or these political systems stop working in Europe, you know, watch for a strong leader to rise. And we have our little pamphlet, A Strong German Leader is Imminent, that talks about why we are expecting that. And then finally, a story that just ties into the Middle East, where the French President Emmanuel Macron has been arguing with France. He called for a halt in all delivery of weapons used in Gaza. So he doesn't want any more weapons shipped to Israel that they're using in Gaza. This is what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had to say about that.
As Israel fights the forces of barbarism led by Iran, all civilized countries should be standing firmly by Israel's side. Yet President Macron and some other Western leaders are now calling for an arms embargo against Israel. Shame on them.
And he's right. I think it's sad to see when you were on the anniversary of October 7th, and it's so clearly a black and white struggle. And you have these forces, this such an evil terrorist group that spends years plotting to come in and murder children and kidnap and rape civilians. And even a country as civilized as France can't get on the right side of that struggle. And that shows something very sick about this world. I think that's something we've seen all year since October 7th, that the fact that the world is on the fence or the world sides with Hamas and Hezbollah shows you how sick our modern societies are. But the good news of this show is that this show really is all about how they will be cured. We talk a lot about the sickness. We have a responsibility to show you just how sick this world's society, this world's governments are. And this is why we see punishments in the form of things like weather curses, like we heard at the start. But God is helping, bringing us to the point where we see, where we finally acknowledge that sickness. And only then will we be receptive to a cure. Will we be willing to look to God for a cure? That is what all of this is about, is God bringing mankind to the point where they were willing to look to God for the cure to their problems and how to build a healthy, robust society. That is ultimately what God is doing in these world events. He's bringing mankind to that point where they learn that lesson, they learn that they look to God for a cure, and then he can bring solutions and hope and joy and prosperity beyond man's wildest imaginings into this world. That is about all we have for you today on today's Trumpet World. All of the literature that we mentioned on the show will be linked to in the show notes. I'll just give a special mention once again to that booklet, Why Natural Disasters. It is such a great overview to what God is doing in world events, why a loving God punishes, why a loving God punishes innocence, or why a loving God allows weather curses to affect innocence. These big questions that theologians even debate for hours and hours, it shows you the clear answers that are right there in the Bible. So you can get that. You can get all of these different books and booklets on our website, thetrumpet.com. We will be back on Wednesday with a special edition that I put together traveling around Paris. It is a little bit rough around the red edges, I have to confess. I think it was very much a learning experience of what do we need to do? What other bits of equipment do we need to take this show on the road? But I still think there's something that you will find interesting and valuable there. We will then take a bit of a hiatus for the next week and a half. I think we'll run reruns or figure out something else a little bit different to do with next week's Friday. And then the show after that, as we take our annual break for the Feast of Tabernacles
on God's holy day calendar, a time that points us to the soon coming world where God shows mankind the solutions to all of these problems. So if you don't see a new show up next week, don't worry. That is why. But thank you so much for joining us for this week. Thank you very much to George Haddad for engineering and production. You can send us any comments or any questions at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We'll be back with you in about a week and a half. And until then, keep watching your world.